Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Monday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody had a good weekend, made it through. Man, I hope everybody's AC held up. It is, it's miserable out there. It is. The heat index, I heard a little while ago that the heat index in Auburn was 113. And I believe it. You stay out there for a couple of minutes, and it's just almost unbearable. And that's an amazing tribute to football players who are going through practice, or anybody who's having to do anything for, you know, any length of time outside in this weather.
We talked about this earlier in the summer, but it was some energy cooperative in the state sent out the reminder, you know, your AC is really not supposed to be more than 21 degrees cooler than the outside temp. Today's one of those days that really, makes that one tough.
Yeah, because it's 97 right now.
I think that's
the temperature.
I think that's for energy efficiency more than for anything else. Right. I mean, you can, and there is the risk of when you go much, much stronger than that, you can overwork both, you know, the power grid and the AC and stuff. But no, when it's this hot. Like, I was trying to do I don't know how much of today's appearance on the Max Roundtable you heard. My phone was overheating. I was outside the complex.
Oh, no. Oh, is that right?
Trying to do the call, and yeah, repeatedly, like, my phone gave me the...
I heard him say that they'd lost you one time, and that was about it.
Yeah, it was a little heat warning from the phone just from being outside for a half hour or so trying to do that phone call. So it is a scorcher out there, and... maybe that'll pay off for Auburn early in the season because they got some big games and potentially big day games that could be contested. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking Auburn-Georgia on the 30th could be a 2:30 game, and it'll be a pretty warm one, I imagine, if so. Even the A&M game. I mean, there's other big 2:30 games potentially that day, but, you know, Auburn's got a game at Texas A&M early in the season, so this could this could potentially pay dividends.
Oh, yeah, and we will get into practice. Auburn scrimmaging for the first time this past Saturday. We'd love for you to join in. It's the regular Monday crew. Brian Matthews was working on something and, you know, had let me know that he might be a little bit late, but he's here on time. So we've got everybody who's normally here, Bill, Dan, Brian, with Drew at the controls as we get things started here on the Monday Drive.
What were you working on that had you worried you might be a little bit late there, Brian?
It's a secret.
Yeah. But it's not a big story, but I think it is an exciting story. Just some improvements going on with Auburn Athletics, part of their infrastructure that I'm going to write about for later this week.
So what, I guess here's a nice place to start today. What have you heard about the scrimmage on Saturday? Because I think that's maybe, I mean, I know it feels like a while ago because we've had some developments since then. But
there haven't been many developments football-wise.
You're right, but it is, you know, lots been going on. What's the buzz from you guys? What's the buzz about what happened on Saturday in the stadium?
Well, it sounds like, especially early, that Auburn was able to run the ball really well and move the ball really well. And I think all three quarterbacks had their moments for sure, from what we can tell. I know some people are saying that Holden had the best scrimmage of them all. I'm not sure if that's accurate.
Well, I was told by someone to also, it needed to be put in perspective who he was going against.
Exactly what I was told too. Exactly. So you've got to take everything with a grain of salt. I thought the most interesting thing that Ufreeze said afterwards was about the receivers. He said that they had a really good week.
He said they had an incredible week of practice.
But.
Yeah, it was a big but.
In the scrimmage, they did not play well. He said they had a bunch of MAs, missed assignments, and also mentioned loafs.
Loafs. He said there could have been loafs. They either missed assignments or they were loafing.
And it's not something you want to hear from your head coach about a certain position, so I'm sure that was addressed over the weekend.
I thought it was interesting, Brian. I was trying to figure who all was out there because when he started listing injuries – there were a few receivers that he mentioned that weren't out there? I mean, no Javarius Johnson, no Cam Brown. Who else did he mention at receiver? He mentioned somebody else.
Corey Moore, maybe?
Yeah, Corey Moore. Okay. I mean, so there are three of the guys that weren't out there. And we noticed that we hadn't seen Var or Camden Brown.
We're under the impression Malcolm didn't.
Yeah, I don't think either, Malcolm did either. Yeah. So that's right. So you had four receivers, and that's four returning receivers who were not out there on Saturday. And then the rest of them, you know, didn't shine, at least according to Hugh.
Nick Martner caught a touchdown pass.
Right.
I think Shane Hooks caught a long pass down to the one, maybe. Had a nice catch and run down to the one, I think it was.
Was it Hooks or Shorter?
I thought that was Hooks. Maybe Shorter had another touchdown catch.
I don't know. I heard a couple of different things. So, I mean, it sounded like a few receivers had decent plays. I didn't hear much about Caleb Burton.
No, and Caleb Burton.
And he's a guy that we've heard an awful lot about all fall.
And Jay Fair also.
So. The receivers I would expect, you know, not just involving the scrimmage, I would also take into account what we saw in practice the first week or so. The receivers I would expect to see a lot of early on seem like the four transfers and Jay Fair and, if healthy, Javarius Johnson. Would you add or subtract from that list?
It would be hard to add to that.
Camden Brown,
Hugh Freeze said he doesn't know that he's really had a chance to see him practice.
How about this?
Because he's been injured the whole time.
Ominous words about Camden Brown from Hugh Freeze, because it does seem like Hugh Freeze, you know, he talked about him like
hard
like,
to make the club from the tub.
Yeah,
you know,
like a stranger almost. And so, yeah, maybe Hugh Freeze, maybe Camden Brown can get healthy and play his way into serious consideration. At the moment, I would say that's also true of Coy Moore. Right?
Like
maybe
I agree.
Maybe he can get healthy. Maybe he can play his way in right now. And I guess that leaves out a few of the injured players we mentioned that would leave out.
But some of those injured players. See, at least Javarius Johnson was out there all spring, and Hugh Freeze said he'd been having a really good fall till he got hurt and had to get some stitches inside his mouth. But the other guys, Coy, Malcolm, Camden, they haven't been out there a lot this spring or this fall.
And I would think Amari Kelly could get a shot in there too. He's the one that I didn't name of those six.
We haven't heard that he's hurt.
We haven't heard that he's hurt. And I also would say, aside from a practice or two where we saw him running with what we thought were the ones, I don't know how often we've heard about Amari Kelly compared to
maybe we're not asking.
Yeah, maybe we're not asking specifically about Amari Kelly, but he would be a receiver where I would just say there seems to be less buzz than some of the others. But yeah, Brian, where do you think things stand at receiver after that first scrimmage and based on what you've seen and heard throughout the fall?
I just think there's a lot of competition there. There's a lot of unproven players there, whether they're incoming transfers or returning players. I just think it's going to be a process to get them ready and probably something that's going to continue to be evaluated as the season goes on. I just don't think they're going to start out game one against UMass with these are our three starters, these are our top three backups, and we're going to roll with those six or whatever the whole season. I think you're going to see some guys coming and going and some guys develop and become top targets and big play threats as the season goes forward.
And I know that the question everybody wants to hear us talk about, Brian asked the question of Hugh Freeze about, you know, that he had said in 10 days he'd like to be from 3-2. And Brian asked that. He said, you'd said you'd like to be down to 2. And I think a lot of people are taking what he said, and he didn't go into details. He didn't say, when he said, had my mind made up yesterday, but I've got to look at the film. And that's what he said. Now, I've heard different people today say, well, that means he's changed his mind on the starter. That he didn't say that.
No, he didn't.
I mean, it could, maybe that's it. But, I mean, it could very well be a direct answer to your question. He's not ready to get it down to 2.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that the guy he had number one's now number 3.
Yeah, maybe he thought he knew who was going to be 3 and who was going to be 2 going into the scrimmage, and the player who was going to be 3 did enough to make it a little bit more difficult.
That's
how I took it.
Yeah.
Now, again, we're not, you know, we didn't get a chance to follow up and go, does that mean? but it's funny how I've heard some folks around the state today say that means that whoever he had in mind as his starter isn't the starter anymore.
No, I don't know if that. I wouldn't slam the door on that because we'll learn more.
Well, we don't know who yet is the starter either.
We'll learn more when Auburn has a starting quarterback. But I think this could be a situation where maybe he had a better idea going into the scrimmage about who the third best quarterback on the team was, and some things happened in the scrimmage that made him question those beliefs. I don't know. I mean, that was, you know, we should play Hugh Freeze from Saturday because it was like an episode of The Drive, right? Bill and I got to ask because
I didn't think other people were going to ask questions. Well,
here's what happened is I think that some of the, I talked to Justin about this on the podcast, some of the writers were so focused on transcribing and tweeting updates about what Hugh Freeze had to say that
they didn't raise their hand to ask a question.
I think that's serious. And so they were, you know, there was, I mean, I noticed it with you, and it definitely happened with me, where there'd be a pause, and Kirk would look at us and be like, you guys have questions.
And it's like, well, I did it.
I know you two.
I sort of got disappointed there. I wasn't raising my hand fast enough at the end. I had another question.
I thought we did a pretty good job, though. We asked about pretty much every position group except the tight ends, right? I mean, so
yeah. We know they're good.
That's okay.
Yeah. I mean,
I wanted to ask about the returners, actually. Really, that's one thing we didn't hear. You know, because I know they worked a little on special teams. Yeah. Wondered how the return game
got,
is shaping.
Got a little bit about the return game from Damari today because I think Brian asked him about his involvement on special teams. Damari not working with the returners is what he told us as much as he's doing.
No, I thought he said he's working with returners and on kick.
Oh, I thought he was doing
and kick coverage.
I thought he was on kickoff coverage.
Kickoff. Yeah.
Is he working with the returners too? Was that part of his answer?
Okay. Let me read
that. Because I know he was talking about working on kickoff coverage.
I may have heard wrong. I'm looking at that.
Yeah, I just wonder if he's got a role in the offense.
Yeah, he says kickoff return. Kickoff, okay. And you know, I'll do anything in practice just to help the team.
So, I wonder if that means.
Kickoff coverage, kickoff return. Which makes
sense. And Auburn has used the backup running backs as useful weapons. Yeah. In special teams before. Damari was great wasn't he?
I'm not convinced that Damari's going to be a backup running back. Anybody's told me that he's going to
We don't know if Jarquez is going to be out there, you know, very start anyway.
Even besides all that, and I do think Jarquez now will be out there, but I'm saying Damari has really stepped up, and he's really good, and just watch out for him. Not saying he's going to beat out Jarquez for number one, but I think he's going to have more of an impact than people are expecting, maybe on number two.
And nothing against Jarquez Hunter. Nothing against Jarquez Hunter.
Not at all.
But we've seen multiple cases in the last decade where in the first couple weeks of August, we had one idea of who was going to lead Auburn in rushing, and lo and behold, at the end of the season, it's somebody else, right? I mean, you think about, was it supposed to be Cam Pettway in 2016?
Not even close.
Was it supposed to be Kerryon in 2017 after the season Cam Pettway had the year before? Was it supposed to be Booby Whitlow in 2018? You know, so this is something that's happened. Granted, those were previous coaching staffs. Even Tank Bigsby. I don't know if Tank Bigsby was universally recognized as the best running back on the team going into the
some people who had really been frustrated with the talent on that side of the
right ball. As a true freshman, I think it took a game or two before it was apparent to everyone that, you know, the Tank was the top option at running back.
Once it was apparent, it was bad. And
by the way, we don't talk fantasy football that much on the show, and this is biased information to an extent. I would add Tank Bigsby. I would look to draft him this season.
Yeah.
Long term too, but even if you're in a redraft league, I could see Tank Bigsby being a real weapon for Jacksonville this season, and he is having an incredible preseason for the Jaguars so far.
He was great at Auburn, and he was great without a lot of help.
Yep. Oh yeah. That's one thing. One takeaway. One thing that I've just heard from a few folks is I think everyone is going to be much more pleased with the offensive line.
Oh, I think that's 100% true. I mean, I felt that in spring and.
But folks that watched it Saturday went, man, that's better.
Yeah.
We had some praise from the offensive line today from Damari. Yep. We had some praise from the offensive line from Jason Jones, who talked about some of those guys.
Yeah, Justin Rogers was talking about it the other day, acting like, oh, they're going to get back. And it sounded like the offensive line, at least early on, had their way.
I mean, this has been a unit that's really been Auburn's Achilles heel for a while now, right? And especially the tackle position. And I just what they've done in 8 months with that group is the biggest, probably the most important thing besides quarterback that they could have improved on this football team.
And it didn't seem, I mean, I guess it seemed possible to do it, but unlikely. When we were, you know, going back to December, right, we were telling people, it's tough to go find three high-caliber starters in the transfer portal in the same offseason.
They may have found four.
On the offensive line. You're right. Maybe Auburn has found four. But the three that Auburn went out and got that were in high demand in the portal that Auburn landed before the spring practice, the Avery Jones, Dylan Wade, Gunnar Britton. Yep. Like those three. Are you adding somebody else to the?
No, I'd say Muskie and it sure seems like Too Tall Miller is getting a lot of talk about his competition with Gunnar Britton now.
Right.
It looked like, oh, those things are locked. I'm not as sure about right tackle being locked down now.
Yeah. I mean, Miller as a junior college player is sort of a different evaluation than a guy who's played bowl subdivision football before. But no, I mean, yeah, Miller's another one. You're right, a non-freshman that they've added to that offensive line room. But the three guys that – and – I wonder how much we've seen Miller run. I mean, have we seen Miller run with the ones as much as I feel like as much as Britton certainly
in
practice.
Not at all.
Like that's the reason I think a lot of people believe that three of those spots are locked up and it's based on how much we see those three
when
running.
We've seen him, it's been the same it's pretty much been the same five.
Yeah, with Tate and Cam, right?
Yes.
Which I think some people wonder, like, where does that leave Jeremiah Wright? And you know, Hugh Freeze tells us, you know, you need more than five on the offensive line.
Well, he didn't sound like he minded having four guards that could play.
Right, and that could open a door for Muskrat, and that there could also that could leave a need for a player like Too Tall Miller or even Dylan Senda, right, to maybe contribute at tackle if you're leaning on more than three guards, because I think people thought Muskrat would be. Would be your third tackle potentially if he wasn't one of your top three guards.
Well, yeah, because that's what he was last year at Tulsa.
If you had three
tackle opposite Wade.
If you had three guards you felt good about, you could use Muskrat as maybe the number three tackle. But if you want to play four guards and if you feel like between Too Tall Miller and I'm still impressed, Brian, with how quickly Dylan Senda became a guy that we usually see on the second team. You know, for someone who was not on the roster.
Yeah.
The week before fall practice started, you know, and Hugh Freeze points out, like, this is not someone who's an alien to college football. Like he went through an off season and a half, right? Senda's a true freshman, right? Technically.
Yes.
Like he went through an off season. He went through a spring with Northwestern, but this is another guy who at one of the toughest spots to contribute as a true freshman in college football, the offensive line. This is somebody that Auburn, I don't know, him and Connor Lue for that matter.
I think you just named two guys for the future, right? I think Connor Lue is probably your backup center and can back up guard too. Mm-hmm. I think Senda is backing up somewhere this year, maybe the seventh or eighth or ninth guy in the rotation. And then I've heard some good things about E.J. Harris.
Yeah, I was going to say that Dylan Wade was mentioning him a little bit the other day.
So I think Coach Freeze mentioned him too at the presser.
Mm-hmm. You got three freshmen there that they're feeling that maybe in the next year or two can certainly be starters or be major contributors or pushing for a starting job. On this line, you got Too Tall Miller coming back. You've got Dylan Wade potentially coming back if he wants to, or we'll see how good of a season he has. So Wright can come back too, Jeremiah.
Yeah,
Wright.
Yeah.
He's just a junior.
He's just a sophomore, third-year sophomore.
Tate Johnson is just a – He's kind of the year left.
Yeah, he's a fourth-year junior.
Yep. So,
and these are guys with the COVID year they could utilize as well because they were in college football in 2020.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're
things are looking a whole lot better.
Yeah.
It's incredible
how much it's changed.
And they've shown the ability, getting back to sort of what started this conversation, and they've shown the ability to go into the portal and land a starting caliber player if they need to on the offensive line. I didn't know how many of those would be out there and how many of them would pick one team. And here we are with Auburn having landed at least three and maybe four or five players that people – I mean, it looks like three that were in high demand in the portal in Wade, Jones, and Britton, plus a junior college player that might be asked to contribute immediately and be ready for it, and Jade Muskrat, who popped in a little bit later, but immediately establish himself.
And somebody that we don't mention enough, we'll get a chance to talk to tomorrow, Jake Thornton, I think deserves a good bit of credit. As a matter of fact, now, and I want to ask him this tomorrow because I've had two different people tell me that Coach Thornton is saying he feels like Auburn's offensive line is in better shape right now than Ole Miss's offensive line was going into last year. Didn't they lead the SEC in rushing last year?
That's why I keep thinking that this offense, I mean, this team is going to really run the ball well. I really feel strong about that.
Mm-hmm.
I also mentioned Tyler Johnson. Dylan Wade.
That is a large young man.
Dylan Wade talked about how he's just a natural talent and that once he puts it all together, he's going to be an amazing tackle in the future. So you feel much better now about what you got on the field mm-hmm. this fall and what you got for the future. And they could be days away potentially from getting a top tackle in the country, DeAndre Carter, you know, announcing his commitment potentially to Auburn. So, I mean, things are looking so much better on the offensive line now.
No kidding. We'll talk some recruiting and more when we come back. Love for you to join in as we're just getting underway here with hour number one of the Monday Drive and the first hour of the show brought to you as usual by Kia of Auburn on South College and KiaofAuburn.com. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. And they're also the sponsor of our hotline. You can get through to us by calling 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, which is available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform, search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center that's presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
We need to get to our first break of the afternoon. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
At Dixie Electric, Plumbing
Hero. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in. Yeah, if we get a chance, do we have the Hugh audio? We got some Hugh audio.
Yeah, the Hugh press conference should be on the
Imogen.
They got that on Imogen, and then I went and talked to Damari and Jason and McLeod and who would in the Zion Puckett. So we got four player interviews potentially we could run today as well later on in the show if we'd like. But you know, Brian's got a ton of information, and We left Friday's show feeling good about the recruitment of Flory Badunga.
Yeah, well, we felt good about the recruitment of T.J. Lindsey and Flory Badunga.
Yeah,
it was trending in that direction. Well, Auburn did get T.J. Lindsey pick up a four-star defensive lineman.
Big physical lineman. I mean, you're going to love this guy. He's going to be a D-end or a D-tackle, you know. Pretty athletic, can make plays behind the line of scrimmage, and it's got a really high motor. So I just think it's another great addition to that defensive line, and they may not be done there. Kamarian
Franklin
is deciding, is it the 18th? Is that right?
18th or 19th.
I think it's this.
It's this coming
Thursday?
The way Auburn is competing.
Or sometime this week.
The way Auburn is competing for top.
Friday. I think I was thinking it was Friday.
Top line of scrimmage players out of high school in the region. Receivers, pass rushers. I mean, these are positions that the NFL draft prioritizes. They are positions where the best teams in college football have elite talent at those positions. And for Auburn to join that list of the best teams in college football, clearly Hugh Freeze believes that's something that they need to step up on the recruiting trail.
They're doing an amazing job, I think. I mean, they haven't got the O-line high school stars yet, but that could change with DeAndre Carter at any moment. And they're in on some other really talented guys, too. And they finished, of course, the 23 class off with some really important signees on the offensive line, like Connor Liu, who they flipped from Miami, like Tyler Johnson.
And then to add Dylan
Clay
Senda.
Whedon, yeah, they added some great kids
from
the portal, too. So I the line of scrimmage is getting so much better and will continue to if they recruit like this. I mean, Keldrick Falk is a special player. He's going to be one of the best defensive linemen I think I've.
Do you think he starts?
I do, at defensive end.
Yeah. It's funny because we heard so much about Nazil Akite,
right.
You know, spring and early fall. So, I mean, that's a really good situation there.
But I think both are going to play a lot of snaps regardless of who starts.
They've moved Marcus inside, right? It's largely Marcus now not really working at Keldrick's position.
Yeah, he's more a tackle. Keldrick is the strong side end.
I think they love the situation they have with Jason and Justin, right? Where it's mm-hmm. it's almost nominal as far as okay, one of them's the starter, but you're going to see them both play a ton of snaps. And with guys that size, you probably don't want one of them playing the entire game.
No, you don't want to have to count on somebody for 60-plus snaps.
As Auburn did multiple times last year with their defensive linemen against teams that run the football, and you saw them melt in the fourth quarter accordingly, and maybe that won't happen as much this year. But, yeah, I think between Falk and Harris and Rodgers/Jones or Jones/Rodgers, however it plays out, I was real impressed by Jason Jones today, too. I just thought he's a thoughtful – like smart guy who's got some cool observations about the defense and the players around him and what makes them what he needs to improve about his game. Jeremy Garrett, like some cool stuff from you were there for some of that from Jason today.
Oh yeah, it was terrific. And
and he's somebody who people say has had a strong offseason. Of the returners,
I think a lot of people just assumed Justin Rodgers was going to be the starter. And it's been back and forth, and the two of those guys are basically co-starters.
Yeah, but you know who usually has pretty good situations at interior defensive line? Great teams.
Yeah. Right?
And that's not to say Auburn will be one, but when it's rare to see a team that's really doing well in college football that's vulnerable up the middle defensively. Like, that's not – because teams can attack if you're vulnerable up the middle. And we'll see what Auburn has at linebacker. I think another player – who, and I don't know how much of this is reflected in the scrimmage on Saturday, but the emergence of Eugene Asante as a guy who people talk about as a, if Auburn had a game tomorrow, he would be a first-team linebacker, seemingly.
Really had a good offseason, yeah, definitely.
Between him and Austin
Larry
Keys
Nixon
and
at that Willie linebacker position.
Aldridge said Kim Riley would play a lot at different spots on the field and would be, but it sounds like those are the... Right now, those are the four that you should expect
probably
to see the
that,
most.
That makes the most sense.
The most at linebacker. Steiner was cited as an injured.
Yeah, he's been banged up a good bit.
Yeah, in the non-contact. So we'll see. But that's sort of complementing whatever Jason and Justin can be. That's what Auburn has at linebacker at the moment.
And Kamarion Flanken is Saturday, and I do like Auburn's chances there too. That would just be. I mean,
top player in Mississippi. That'd be a nice piece to add.
Who seem like what schools seem like the top competition?
I think Tennessee is the top competition.
Tennessee, I've heard. Miami was also in there. I'm wondering what other hats you'll see there, but it would be a really nice pickup for not. And I think it's surprising. Mississippi schools haven't really been involved much to what as far as we know in the Kamarion Franklin thing. It's been some places for.
No, you're right.
Yeah, and he is the number two strong side defensive in the country per Rivals. So he is a big-time pickup. And, that would just be an incredible defensive line class they're putting together.
No question.
Is it Malik Blocker? Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mentioned Flory Badunga to begin the segment. Do you want to go to break and then
talk
about
it? Yeah, we need to. We're running a little behind. We'll talk about that and more. Hey, come on in and join us. 334-321-1390 here on the Monday Drive.
On ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. 23 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Monday afternoon. And we'll get to Shane here momentarily. But, yeah, let's go ahead and... talk about the Flory Badunga. First of all, whose brilliant idea is it to play basketball outside in Atlanta in
terrible.
August?
In the rain.
I don't care what
you're
doing.
You're right.
Outside August
summer,
Atlanta is crazy.
That is just, somebody's got to have more common sense than that.
Had anybody ever been outside in the summertime?
I don't know, I mean,
doesn't exactly. Yeah. Oh, the cool breeze of the night.
Yeah.
No, come on, man. It's still 80 something at night and humid as I don't know what.
Wasn't the humidity. I think one of the writers pointed this out. Like when Auburn did the downtown
the
Tumors
Midnight
thing.
Madness, or the
the ones at Tumors, like the humidity.
You're afraid people are going to slide all over the place.
That was October.
Yes,
it wasn't. It was
that's October in the South.
Yeah.
This was August in the South.
Anyway, of August, terrible.
So because of the rain, because of weather.
Well, Bill, there are no basketball gyms in Atlanta.
That's right. They couldn't have found a place to play inside.
There are no indoor basketball courts in the city of Atlanta.
While I was watching, there were only a few slips. I was surprised.
Apparently, every time play stopped, it was like
try to dry the floor.
It was like curling. Yeah. It was like every time the play stopped, they just go in there.
The sweepers.
Sweepers went in there to dry
but
things
anyway,
off.
So yeah, Florida. So the game. He was going to make an announcement at halftime, but it didn't even make it to half.
No, it was like,
because the game, that's it. They can't play
anymore.
Shut it down. But Flory Badunga announcing, committing to the University of Kansas.
Yeah.
That's a tough loss. I mean, Auburn had worked, but it's crazy. At this time a week ago, nobody thought he was coming to Auburn.
Right.
It seemed like right at the end, and maybe because all the Duke people knew he wasn't going to Duke.
Right, that could have been. I just think people are overreacting to this a little bit. Auburn recruited a 5-star, you know, top 5 overall prospect in the country, and they lost to a blue blood Kansas program for him. I mean, that happens, right?
I do.
They're going to recruit. They're going to continue to recruit top players like him and Jabari Smith and Pettiford and all those guys. You know, they're going to win some and they're going to lose some too. Mm-hmm. It's a big boy recruit.
I don't know how much NIL played a role in Flory Badunga's recruitment. Kansas has a history of sending guys to the NBA. I mean, there's any number of reasons why a top basketball recruit would pick Kansas. It did make me wonder though, Brian, the places that aren't necessarily trying to put a championship level, the traditional basketball powers that aren't necessarily trying to compete for the top football recruits at their school, places like Duke and Kansas, Kentucky, UCLA, Indiana, places like that, could they have an advantage over schools that are also asking for NIL contributions to get top football players? Like, could there be an avenue for, like, because there's only so much money, right? Yeah. And I don't know if any program is recruiting in the top 10 at a top 10 level in football and men's basketball.
That's a great point.
Right now, maybe SC, maybe I don't know where, you know, I don't know where they're at.
Yeah,
maybe,
I don't know.
Maybe Ohio State.
Again,
not knowing. Maybe Alabama has had top 10 classes in both sports over the last.
Well, they have.
But they have.
But
even
we'll
that's post NIL.
We'll
see how often that happens. I just wonder if some basketball schools might say, you know, we can offer a little bit more money in the football schools because the football schools have to, you know, they still have to find the money there for the football program.
That may be. Let's get to the Kia of Auburn hotline, and Shane has been hanging on for a few minutes. Hey, Shane.
Hey, guys. How are y'all doing today?
Doing all right, Shane. Good to hear from you.
Hey, thank you. I just had a quick question, comment about the football program. Seeing as how we don't really know about who is going to be number one, number two yet, and since we know for a fact that our running backs are probably second to none in the country at the room, and our offensive line seems to have been massively upgraded, could we? I know we're going to fall on them or a lot this fall, but could it be like an abnormal amount of kind of counting on that running back room? Like, there's a lot of beasts in there. There's, I've heard 3 or 4 names consistently. So I just didn't know if maybe that's going to be a huge strength and maybe take some pressure away from whoever the quarterback is.
I pretty much agree with that take. I think that is Auburn's strength on offense and maybe on the entire team this fall, besides maybe special teams, which I'm really excited about. But Freeze did kind of address this Saturday. He talked about, well, we've got this RPO offense, so we're not going to run into an 8-man front, you know, and we're not going to pass against, a defense designed to stop the pass, right? They're going to run a three-man front,
dropping 8. No, you're not just going to throw.
However, he also said, but there are some times we're going to have to run the ball no matter what. And
well, you get in situations if you have a lead.
Right, right.
You need to be able to run the ball, run the clock.
I think that's what he was talking about, but I also think there's a component there where Auburn's strength is running the ball, and if you can't
stop Auburn, if it's short yardage too, you don't want to have to be relying on passes all the time in short yardage.
Right, right, and we know that from watching Auburn football for a number of years that even if a team has got an 8-man front or not or whatever front, you can still run against them effectively if you've got, you know, better players, right?
You want to play to your strengths as an offense, but you also want to avoid predictability, right? Because defenses can hone in on, okay, if this offense is one-dimensional, we can devote way too many resources to stopping it. So you want the threat of the pass there to punish defenses that overplay the run, even if you're a team where you're better off running the football the majority of the time, because especially against the best teams in the conference, like you're not necessarily going to be able to do that unless you're just exceptional at it. But no, I would think this is a team when we're talking about a competition at quarterback, a lot of question marks at wide receiver, and two or three of the buzzier players on the team being running backs this offseason. I would say especially Damari and to an extent Jarquez, although
Brian's gotten a lot of talk too, and apparently, I mean, he had some good plays Saturday. One thing that Hugh Freeze and Phillip Montgomery have both said is when people ask them about balance, they point out balance doesn't necessarily mean you run the ball as much as you throw it, or you're 50-50 run and pass. It means if they're giving you the run, you take the run. If they're giving you the pass, you take the pass. Yeah. That is what those two talk about as being balanced. It's the ability to take what they're giving you.
Sure. And then I sort of think avoiding predictability or avoiding one-dimensionality. Avoiding that would be it's even more important than being balanced, because balance would indicate maybe you play against your strength sometimes just because you know for the sake of balance.
No.
Yeah, I mean I mean
if you're good enough, sure. If you're better and you can do it no matter what, but to consistently try to win ball games, you're going to have, I mean, they're going to be teams that design or have more talent to stop what you do best. So you better be able to do the other things as well.
Last season, looking at offenses, the team that had the fewest, okay, how about the team that had the most? Most rushing attempts per game of an SEC team last year was A&M with 43. South Carolina had 40. Ole Miss had 40 if you round up. So a run-heavy SEC offense in 2022 was running the ball 39 to 43 times per game on average.
That's crazy to think about. I mean, when you think back 10, 15 years ago, you'd have teams running it 50 times a game. That wouldn't be unbelievable.
Right. And so that tells you about – I think Georgia had the fewest. Yeah, Georgia had 27 rush attempts per game, which was the fewest.
And people think of Georgia as being an old-style ground-and-pound win with defense, and they only ran the ball 27 times a game?
Georgia was fourth in the conference in pass attempts per game and last in the conference in rushing attempts per game.
The perception is completely opposite from that.
You know, Auburn was third in the conference last year in pass attempts per game? 34 attempts per game last year was third in the SEC.
Maybe they shouldn't have thrown the ball as much.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yep. Might have been a good idea. Yeah. They ran the ball a lot more
team
effectively
defense?
When
I might be looking at team. These are defensive stats.
Okay, I was going to say those numbers just
right.
That's not the way I remember it.
Yeah, okay. I had team offense for a second, but midway through that conversation, it became about team defense.
Okay,
scratch some of that, but we'll get to
it. It makes sense that people would throw the ball more against Georgia because they couldn't run it. So, I mean, I can see that.
So, the correct, I was going to say Auburn didn't throw the ball 34 times per game last year. Okay, team offense. A run-heavy SEC team last year was Ole Miss. 47.
Yeah. There we go. Game. I thought they were the best rushing team in the
Arkansas
league.
Arkansas 46.
Yeah, okay.
So, scratch the first part of that segment. Arkansas and Ole Miss ran the ball. You know, it adds a few more attempts per game, but that's a little bit more in line with what we were thinking.
Well, it's about 10 more. Right. About 10 more games.
So the run heaviest
offenses. Those teams would run it around 50 times a game.
Yes.
When they could.
Yeah. Georgia was middle of the pack. They weren't last in rushing, and Auburn was third, by the way, in rushing attempts last season.
Okay.
41 per game in the conference. And that takes the entire season into account, you know, the switch over. But so, what would you think Auburn's shooting for? 40s, you know, is probably, you know, rushing attempts
well,
per
I
game.
Think the other thing is Auburn's going to be, I think they're going to be much more up-tempo than they were a year ago, too. So they'd like to get more plays. I mean, Auburn, what did Auburn run, 60? I mean, they didn't run a lot of plays last year. I mean, maybe 65
Auburn,
a game?
Auburn was last in the conference in pass attempts
per
game last
that's what
year.
I mean. So
State with 49.
You go from 65 plays a game to 80 a game. You may not add a whole lot of rushing attempts, but it's going to add more total. So, I'd say you'd still run the ball 35 to 45 times a game and throw the ball somewhere in that 30 to 40 range.
Yeah, and maybe
probably 25 to 30.
Maybe if you're enjoying success with one one aspect of the offense versus the other, that skews it some. But I think 40 rushing attempts per game as a goal for this team. I mean, depending on what kind of.
I'd be surprised if they don't.
Yeah, I mean, even though they only.
I think they'd probably run it along the lines of what Ole Miss did a year
ago. Although I would point out, only four teams in the conference ran the ball 40 times per game last year. But I would think Auburn with this team. Yeah. You'd be built to do something like that. And those numbers are correct. Auburn is one of – unlike earlier in the segment when I gave numbers that were completely nonsensical, now 40 – Ole Miss 47 attempts per game, Arkansas 46.5, Auburn 41, Tennessee 40. Those were the teams last year that ran the ball.
Tennessee ran a lot of plays, didn't they?
Tennessee, I believe, was – first,
because they weren't last in passing either.
They were sixth in the conference in passing attempts last season and fourth in rushing. Fourth in the conference in rushing attempts last year. State, LSU, Bama, Georgia, and A&M, the five teams that threw the ball more than Tennessee.
All right, we need to get to our final break of hour number one. Love for you to join in as we continue here on the Monday Drive.
Hi, this is Michael from
ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final few minutes of hour number one of the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Brian, while we got a minute or two, there is a lot going on. There's a lot of information out there, tons of it you guys are putting up there at AuburnSports.com.
We got fall camp going on. We got a lot of decisions coming in, recruiting, basketball and football, and just anything else popping up. We'll be there to cover it. Tomorrow we'll get all the offensive assistants, which is always a good day. So there'll be some good information from that. And then we'll get together for our podcast, and then we'll be back at practice for some video.
Yeah, and they're practicing. That's going to be – Wednesday, of course, first day of class.
Fun.
And then their next practice as well. So the next two practices are going to be in the heat of the afternoon.
Yeah. So testing the team a little bit, right? Because you're going to have to go out there and play in Jordan-Hare Stadium. The first game's at 2:30.
2:30.
Yeah. So you got to prepare for that.
Oh, that's going to be –
By the way,
fans
need to prepare for that too.
Yes, they do.
I would maybe take a brisk walk at some point.
They need to start taking the water to Jordan-Hare right now and start putting up the pallets, right?
Yeah,
you don't want to run out of water or ice.
No kidding.
On that opening game.
Yeah, I was talking to a fellow we work with who took the kids over to the family fest on Saturday. He said, fortunately, the kids were little enough that when he looked at the line to Coach Freeze, kids just ran around, got their face painted, and they went home.
There you go.
He said,
perfect.
That's all they could take. He wasn't going to stay out there in that. And even though it was inside, but the line was coming from outside. Right. James, we're just about, I tell you what, we've got a little less than a minute. We'll go ahead and bring you on. We can get started. Hey, James.
Hey, guys.
What's going on?
Mavs, hot one today.
It's awful.
No, James, my phone was struggling to work, trying to do a phone hit after after practice. It was a hot one out there in the in the middle of the day.
Well, we got a storm headed this way, so maybe I'll cool it off a little bit.
I've had enough of those.
I feel like, we live
in
rain. Florida now.
Yeah, really. I mean, it storms wind blows 50 miles an hour, and
except
then
we don't get the sand and the beach and all the other stuff to come with it.
You know, it's funny. We were talking to our family down near the Gulf. They're not getting much rain. We're getting the rain that used to come down there. Tell you what, James, hang on. Yeah, I knew we were short on time. You'll be up when we come back to start hour number two of the Monday Drive.
Drive.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Monday Drive. Hope everybody doing well, trying to stay as cool as you can. Before we get into anything, let's get back to the Kia of Auburn hotline.
You got James hanging on, right?
Yeah.
Hey, James. Yeah, sorry. I knew we were short on time, so we just had a little fun there at the end. Go ahead.
That's all right. Hey, guys. So I wanted to talk to you about something. All right. I know we missed on the big basketball recruit.
Mm-hmm.
But something that's been on the street, let's put it like that, word on the street, Kansas thought they were out of it, and then Adidas come in and did something with the NIL or something to push it over. Now, I don't know how much stock I actually put in that story, but I do find it interesting that Adidas had an influence supposedly in it at an Under Armour event, and we're supposedly trying to figure out who our new apparel partner is, or even if we don't even know if we're negotiating, who we're negotiating with, because it's not open yet. But I don't know if that, to me, that seems like it would have a bearing on, there's the issue again with this, you know, kids, especially in the basketball, they're not really wanting Under Armour, they want Nike or Adidas, and it seems like we're getting pushed back into that.
I don't think it's hard to think that Auburn is being held back in the world of basketball recruiting when you look at who Auburn's been able to land over the last couple of years. Like, I know what you mean, and maybe... I don't know what the future is for the apparel provider. You know, I still think that Kansas, places like Kansas and Duke, and even Arkansas. We listed some of the places in the previous hour, James, where like these traditional basketball powers are not sharing NIL resources in a significant way with the football program. Like they are the bell cow program of their athletic department, and they can, you know, maybe if it comes down to NIL, and again, I caution, we don't know. If it came down to NIL in the case of Flory Badunga, that's a guy who's going to make a ton of money as a one-and-done player, presumably, and so maybe he's thinking about things other than the biggest dollar offer when it comes to where he's going to play college basketball. Mm. But if NIL played an outsized role, you know, I would think that that's something Auburn's going to have to struggle with, is that the places that aren't also trying to put a championship-level football program but have a history of success in basketball might be able to dig a little bit deeper for the top basketball players.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have brought it up, but the Kansas message boards were pretty out of it come Friday night and Saturday morning, and sometimes Saturday afternoon they were all up on it saying something about Adidas had saved it.
Well, let me ask something Brian, that, so. What do you know about the role shoe companies play in basketball recruiting these days?
Nothing. Yeah, right. I mean, you know what I'm saying, right? Yeah. I mean, what did they play? What role did they play before we had NIL?
They've always played a huge role. Okay. Yeah, there's no question.
So, yeah, I mean, maybe. Can I prove it? You know, do I know this is a fact? I mean, sure it's possible.
I will say Adidas, I mean, especially now, like there are, you know, I could see why they would want to protect their top basketball programs if they can help in any meaningful way to get them – to get them top tier players. I don't know what the rules are there. I don't know what shoe companies, what role they're allowed to play with.
It's also about securing those guys' future when they go to the NBA too. That's a big part of it. So I mean, sure, that could play a part.
Are players getting? I mean, because that's something we thought would happen in the era of NIL. Are players signing contracts with shoe companies as college basketball players? Like, are we seeing players sign endorsement deals as college players with the apparel providers? Like, I thought that was going to start happening.
It seems like I've only heard very few instances where they've announced publicly that players have. That doesn't mean that they're not, you know, already having some agreements.
Flory Badunga is the kind of talent that could sign a deal with Adidas the moment he gets to campus.
Right.
And maybe that played a role in his decision to go with Kansas instead of with Auburn, and that's it gets back to your original point there, James, and that's something, that's something else Auburn's going to have to contend with moving forward.
Well, Auburn can start negotiating with Adidas and with Nike and with whoever they want to on September 1st.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Another kid to keep an eye on is Asa Newell. I mean, it's not like Auburn just their program just died.
He's another top. He's a top ten guy.
Lost
right?
top, yeah, yeah, exactly. He's number 10 overall by Rivals. He's not Badunga. He's more of a stretch four type. You know, he's he can shoot that 3-pointer. You know, he's but he's got pretty good size. I think he's 6'8", 6'9", and can run the floor pretty well. So he doesn't have the hops that Badunga has. So you know, it's not like Auburn basketball recruiting is I mean, it's still really, really good. Ty Bedford has been blowing up since he committed to Auburn way back when. So, yeah, I'd say things are still pretty good.
I agree, guys. I do totally agree with that. It was kind of funny because the Auburn message boards were talking about that's a bad slap in the face from Adidas to come in there and take a player from an Under Armour event, you know, so. I don't know.
Badunga's been playing. Badunga's been playing events all over the country though this summer. I know that there was an article earlier. I think one of the places where people started to really report Auburn's interest was at an Adidas event that he was at earlier this year, where you had coaches from Michigan and Duke and Kansas and Auburn after a player like that. So yeah, I mean, I do wonder. I mean, if he ends up as an Adidas player as a pro. You know, there's probably a little bit more. There's probably a little bit more to this, but I wonder how much success Auburn will have against the absolute top tier basketball programs when it comes down to winning these kind of. This is the third highest rated player Kansas has ever signed. Would have been the top player in Auburn basketball history. Appreciate it.
Good. All right, guys. Yeah, appreciate
great stuff.
Yeah, appreciate the call, James.
And I would expect that Auburn to be very active in the transfer portal going into next year, too. Yeah.
I mean, it's obvious. I mean, sure, Auburn would have loved that because you look at the front court, and most of those guys aren't going to be back after this year.
Yep. So you need some bodies there. But, Bruce Pearl and his staff are pretty good at what they do. You know, he's won two SEC championships, right? Tournament championship, brought Auburn to the Final Four for the first time ever. I mean, and I'm not talking about the last caller in particular, but I've just seen people just losing their minds over, losing a top five player in the country to Kansas. And I'm like, okay, it's happened.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, they did win the national championship in 2022. Like, I think there are some people, even as much as I like the guy, even Jake on Friday made reference to, Auburn beating Kansas in the NCAA tournament in 2019 as though that
beat
was
like a drum.
As that was the end of, as though that was the end of Kansas basketball.
Yeah.
It's like, well, they did win the championship in 2022. On the apparel front, there are a couple, if you look at what's been going on with schools that are partnered with Under Armour, there are a couple of interesting sort of paths you've seen. Under Armour signed the renewal with Notre Dame
with a big bump.
Yeah, to keep them in the fold. Notre Dame or Under Armour cut ties earlier. It was about a decade ago now that they cut ties with UCLA, and UCLA switched. UCLA originally was an Adidas school, switched to Under Armour. Under Armour got out of the deal early, and UCLA has since partnered with Jumpman. And I hear very positive things about the partnership between UCLA and Jumpman, and we'll see if the Jumpman brand of Nike products wants to represent more. I know they are Florida's partner, they are Oklahoma's partner, UNC, of course. Like the Jordan / Jumpman, like that brand has the it's got a couple of different, like, it's sort of an exclusive few schools. And then Boston College left Under Armour and signed, this would have been about 2 years ago, Boston College signed a deal with New Balance that is worth 50% more per student than the deal they were getting from Under Armour. And it's every sport except football, because I guess New Balance doesn't do football equipment, but it was every sport except football. And I believe they are the only major.
What do they do with football?
I don't know what they're doing with football. I wonder if they had to find an outside provider or something to partner with just in football. But yeah, it's seeing New Balance as a brand also mentioned in this in the debate. And I wonder if they're going to get more serious and go after bigger schools. But don't rule out that's a company that's seen some growth and could be trying to get into the game of representing college basketball teams.
334-321-1390. That is the Kia of Auburn hotline. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. Love for you to join in here in hour number two of The Drive, which is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika. on the web at orthoclinic.com.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast. Available however you listen to podcasts, go to your favorite podcasting platform, search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center. If you use one of the podcasting platforms, Google, Apple, Spotify, leave a review, rate, review, subscribe. It all helps us if you consume the show that way. Podcasts are presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
We'll get to our first break here of hour number two. Love for you to join in as we continue here on the Monday Drive.
Lee County Revenue Commissioner.
NAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 5:15 on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews with Drew at the controls, and we'll head to the Kia of Auburn hotline. And Spectre is up next. Hey, Spectre.
Hot afternoon, guys.
Ooh, I don't need it any hotter, let me tell you that.
Yeah, listen, I want to get y'all's opinion on something here. If a coach is deciding who's going to be his ones and twos, and he's basically already decided maybe about the ones, but the twos is kind of hard. And do you think that the fact that the portal has a lot to do with his selection of the twos?
What do you mean? Like, because you think he might show loyalty to players that he brought in himself rather than players he inherited?
Well, I'll give you an example. Let's go over the quarterback situation. All right, Thorne, he can't jump in the portal anymore, I don't think. Let's see.
Robbie Ashford, conceivably, if Robbie wanted to transfer after the season is over, I think there's a chance he would have his degree. I don't know enough academically about it. Robbie was what, high school class of
4 years ago?
Was he high school class of 2019? Of 19? Okay, mm-hmm. So you know, Robbie could conceivably have his degree before football season is over,
or 20.
And before
I guess
the fall term is over, and be immediately eligible somewhere else. He has used his one undergraduate transfer, presumably, and then Holden could transfer wherever he wanted.
Yeah, let's assume that he doesn't get his degree anytime soon. That leaves Holden very possibly could jump. And when does the portal open back up?
After the season. Mm-hmm. Yeah, players can opt out.
Yeah, they can
the
announce that they're going to enter the portal,
and then they can essentially leave their team with the intention of going into the portal. But players can't actually leave. If you're enrolled at a place in the fall, you can't leave the team and join another team until the fall term is over.
Well, the way I see it, from what everybody's talking today, that these three quarterbacks are heading down the stretch neck to neck, and if he's going to make a decision, I think who's going to be number two, I think Holden would have to be the big winner there as far as him being able to jump into the portal if he doesn't get selected.
Yeah, you know, I, and Spectre, I understand your logic there. And Brian, it does make sense that the perception, the thought was, well, Peyton and Robbie are going to be the top two. And Holden's going to be the number three.
Yes.
And we said earlier that when Hugh Freeze was talking about cutting down to two, that he'd have to look at the film, that the number three guy obviously caught his eye. So,
yes.
And I can understand the thinking that if your number three guy is someone who could enter the portal, then yeah, that would be another reason.
And I suppose that could also mean that the number two guy didn't perform as well as you were hoping, and maybe there's a little. But we've heard nothing but, and I think they've been deliberate about this.
Sure.
Seems like it's been the reviews of all three quarterbacks have been very positive.
Mm-hmm.
What that means as far as where the battle stands, I don't know. I don't know if I would classify it as neck and neck, because neck and neck gives off the impression, like, I still think it would be a huge upset if Holden Gurner won the job outright, you know what I mean, and became the one playing his way into the backup role, you know, especially if one of the other two guys struggles. I think that seems a little bit more plausible to me.
I have a couple of thoughts on this. I think what people think they know and what's happening at the quarterback race is two totally different things, in my opinion. I think Peyton Thorne is still the man to beat there, and I don't think he's having a bad camp at all, I think, because of his experience and because Hugh Freeze and his coaches want to put these all these quarterbacks under adverse situations. The type of adverse situations that Peyton Thorne might be put under is going to be a whole lot different than an adverse situation that a Robbie Ashford or Holden Garner is put under. Just my opinion. But I will say that I do think coaches now are more careful about how they treat backups and how they talk about them and how they treat them during practice because they are worried about the transfer portal. I think that doesn't necessarily change game day, right? I mean, maybe they're going to get a guy out there earlier if they can, if they believe he can help them play. But I think during practice, during especially after spring practice, right? If you've got a guy who's maybe a second or third team tackle that you think has a future starter, you know, that's going to help your team a lot out.
Keep them happy as you can.
You're gonna find ways to prop that dude up a little bit to try to keep him around. So I think that is something that you have to consider now. But I don't think it necessarily is going to affect the rotation once the season starts. You know, unless we're talking about, okay, let's get as many people in the second half against UMass as possible. You know what I'm saying? Maybe they do that a little bit earlier or something when the game's already out of line. I don't know. But I do think it's interesting to keep that in the back of your mind about some certain decisions that are made.
Yeah, I agree with that. Absolutely. You know, Holden, you keep this in mind, too. Holden's the younger of the three as far as being a freshman. The other two, I guess, Smith Morris.
So no, yeah, Holden was a true freshman last year of the three. Yeah, he's the one.
Yeah, so he's the future of Auburn, I believe, and because these other two could be gone after the season. I mean, you know, they could dive into that NFL.
Well, and Holden could be gone after the season too if there's a greater opportunity for playing time somewhere else, or he decides, you know, his future because he's also, you know, with a staff that didn't necessarily recruit him out of high school. So I think there's I think that the future. I mean, we're seeing, and we appreciate the phone call, Spectre. We're right up against it, but it's the movement we're seeing. Oh, we're not. Are we good?
No. We took an early break.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. So,
yeah, Spectre still got time. Right,
good. Well, sorry about that, Spectre. I just tried to get rid of you prematurely.
Well, usually we're still trying to get that first break in this time. We went to it early.
I think Georgia is a great example of this. They've got three quarterbacks that are really highly recruited. They're all competing for that spot, that number one spot.
And it looks like Carson Beck is the one, but the other two you keep hearing, oh, this one's making a move, the other one's making a move. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
That's that. Yeah. And Specker, I think that's, to you know, Kirby's trying to keep as many of them as he can, as long as he can.
Yep.
That's right. Well, listen, after yesterday, what happened with the offensive line, anything?
Sounded like the offensive line had a really good day, especially running the ball. I mean, you know, we heard, you know, Jarquez wasn't out there very much, but all the backs had some nice runs.
Want to tell them? I mean, left to right at the moment, it sounds like it sounds like Wade Johnson.
Yep.
Right. I think it's right.
Over Tate Johnson, okay.
And player talk about how well that.
Well, we've heard Dylan talk about how aggressive and how powerful Jeremiah Wright is. I still want to look out there. Watch tomorrow.
Yeah,
we'll see.
See who's the first one out there.
I was going to say
close. I'm not saying one's won it yet.
You know, it's sort of like the conversation Bill was having earlier about Too Tall Miller. I think there's been positive buzz about Jeremiah Wright and Too Tall Miller, but it does feel like when we watch what we think is the first team offense. It's often Tate Johnson as the right guard, or left guard, Cam Stutz as the right guard, Avery Jones at center.
Definitely.
And then the two tackles, Dylan Wade at left tackle, Gunnar Britton at right tackle.
I'll tell you one thing that I've heard multiple times, Spectre, is that Avery Jones is as good as a lot of folks have seen at center for Auburn in quite a while.
Yes.
You know, we were talking about Justin Rogers and Jason Jones. A couple of folks I talked to said – Avery Jones had no problem handling those guys.
Yeah, those are some big dudes he's moving around.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, let me ask this question about Wright. If he doesn't start out in the ones, is there a chance he'll go back over to defense, or is he going to
stay? No. He's an offensive guy, and that's where his long-term future is. Yep. Yeah, yep. No question.
Okay, great. All right, guys, that's all I got. Thanks.
All right, Spectre. Yeah, and that was interesting when we asked Hugh about the guards. When he was asked about the guards,
he snapped back quick on that.
He was like,
right?
Hey,
more than
he's got more than two, and he's fine with more than two. So, I mean, I know you don't see an awful lot of shuffling there in the line, but they may use guards a little bit the way they do sort of the defensive guys, keep them fresh.
Could be.
And between, look, you got to see how they play on the field.
Right.
But with Tate Johnson and Jeremiah Wright, you've got two guys that are eligible in 2024 on top of what it could be in 23. We were just talking about Connor Lue and Dylan Senda. I mean, suddenly putting together some guys that belong on the two deep or maybe in the starting lineup, assuming they're on the team because things can change,
sure.
But assuming they're around.
Oh, yeah, in it's hard to assume anybody's going to be on any team next year.
I know. I mean, these things, especially on a team that just...
Man, you remember how that used to be, though? You'd have a signing class, and you'd project people for 3 years down the road. Hey, who's going to be a draft pick? Who's going to be a starter? And so on. Now it's like... For what team are they going to be on next year?
Project that Auburn class of 21 for me again.
Two left.
With the two guys
two left.
Yeah.
Yep.
Project the Langlois and Jarquez.
Jarquez, right.
And 17 of 19 players.
That should be the heart of your team right now, right? That is the class that is your best players.
That's why this team has had a heart. This team's had a heart transplant.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this team.
A hard restart.
They have brought in a
reboot.
They brought in a pacemaker in Hugh Freeze to try to revive things because you know what? Had you not brought him in, you'd have been looking at that.
Oh,
you'd have been
man.
Looking at that as the heart of your team, and you wonder if Jarquez even sticks around.
Well, there'd be a pulse.
What I can't imagine how I don't want to be too negative, but how bad would this team be if the previous coach was still here? I just can't imagine.
And nothing had changed?
Yeah.
Like another offseason of the kind of departures we'd seen?
Would there be 60 scholarship players on the team?
I don't know. I mean, I guess they would have filled out players to the portal, but, you know.
Oh, they could have gone, could have gone around, I'm sure. You know, there's kids that would go, I'll take a scholarship.
It wouldn't have been the caliber of players
play
that was brought in for sure.
That was happening last summer, and I sort of asked about it, and people were sensitive, but they acknowledged it, where it's like, for roster depth purposes in the summer of 21, Auburn was bringing in guys where this was their only SEC offer. This was their only Power 5 offer. I mean, in an emergency, you can take a player like that, right? But you don't want multiple signees to be guys where, this was their way out of, this was their only way out of the group of five, or this was their only way.
That's not what you want.
Yeah.
No, we talked about all those players that were out there looking for spots. You don't want to be the school that goes, well, we've got room.
Yeah. We got nothing but inventory right now. Everything must go. Like, no, it does sound like, I mean, we talked with Jalen McLeod today, Brian, and he said, I mean, this is a, and it's one of many, where it's like, he was an in-demand recruit. Like, there were other schools on the East Coast, SEC schools, ACC schools, that were after him, and he decides on Auburn. I mean, it's kind of caliber. If you want to play at the top level in college football, like those are the kind of recruiting battles you need to be winning in the short term in the portal. Long term, you need to be winning them at the high school level, and that's where, Brian, there could be some. We'll see what happens Saturday with Kamarian Franklin, right? But there could be more good news for Auburn coming from the recruiting trail in high school.
Never seen. I mean, the best class I've seen was 2010. That was four nationally. And I don't know this class is quite going to get there, but it's going to be close. I think they're going to get Kamarian Franklin.
And we're talking this year.
Yeah.
The thought was, well, by 25.
Right.
Yeah.
And now they're doing it right now.
And the word a high school coach used was relentless during Big Cat weekend. I bumped into somebody and he told me, this staff is relentless. And that also means... Just because they finished second or third on a kid now, right? A kid made a commitment in the summertime or earlier and picked a different school. I think Auburn's keeping those lines of communication open until ink is on paper.
Right.
And so you know, don't rule out the possibility of a flip or two, especially if someone's season goes really south.
Well, they had some great flips down the stretch last year. I mean, you look at some of Auburn's best players in the 23 class: Keldrick Falk, Connor Lue, kindly all flips from major schools. It's not just flipping, it's also keep that relationship going, because that kid may go to a school not like it after a year or two and want to transfer.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking, so don't burn those bridges, coaches.
Speaking of Keldrick Falk, and he almost picked Florida State.
Yep.
Florida State is in the preseason coaches poll that we just saw earlier.
Yeah, Auburn barely in view. I think they had the 37th most votes.
37th most votes. Five of the five SEC West teams receiving more votes than our four SEC West teams in the top 25
mm-hmm.
in the preseason. You've got Georgia receiving 60 of the 63. This is the coaches poll. I said that right. All right, so this is the AP poll
today.
Yeah, this is the AP poll. Georgia received 60 of the 63 first place votes in the AP poll. Michigan receiving two and Ohio State receiving one. Michigan finishing second in the poll. Ohio State finishing third.
How about this? Alabama. This is the lowest they have been in the preseason poll, and they are
number four.
They're number four. That's
the
lowest.
Oh,
they've,
my God,
but get this, get this. It's the lowest they've been in the preseason poll since 2009.
That's a pretty amazing run.
2009.
Yeah. Top three finishes.
Predicted finishes.
Top three preseason AP poll ranking every year from 2010 through
until
last
now.
Season. Top three in the AP poll.
And LSU's five, right? Alabama four, LSU five.
That's right.
If you're tired of that, Auburn, there's only one way to stop that, and that's to start winning football games, to start beating them on the field and beating them in the recruiting. And Auburn's starting to do that now a little bit.
Alabama's lowest preseason ranking, like Bill said, since 2009. LSU number five, that's the highest preseason ranking for LSU since 2016. Rounding out the top 10, USC 6, Penn State 7, Florida State 8, Clemson 9, Washington 10, the preseason top 10 in the AP poll. Bo Nix and the Oregon Ducks are 15. You've got future SEC team Texas is 12, and Tennessee's Texas is 11, Tennessee is 12. Let's see here. Now, runner-up TCU is 17, national runner-up TCU is 17. Future SEC program Oklahoma is 20.
Ole Miss and Texas A&M. Right?
Ole Miss is 22. A&M 23. That's a gamble on Ole. I mean, that's a bet
it's
on
a
the
gamble on Ole Miss.
It feels like more of a gamble on A&M with the way they finished the season, right? I do suppose that if you're looking at the way
Ole Miss finished wasn't exactly strong either, though.
That's true. They almost almost lost that Egg Bowl, right? That had you thinking. Had you thinking it was could be Lane Kiffin's final game in Oxford. But Brian, I mean, using the recruiting rankings and stuff, like A&M's probably one of the 25 most talented teams. It's just a matter of whether or not they can they can play like it on the field.
Yeah, we'll see. They've signed really good classes lately. They've had some attrition with some of those guys, but yes, they have a pretty good blue chip ratio, I think it's called, and they should be, but we'll see. I'm not sure. I buy it. I thought Jimbo Fisher really drove Florida State program into the ground before he left, and I'm just not convinced that he's an upper level national championship caliber coach anymore. We'll see.
We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Matt, hold on. You're up when we come back for the final half hour of the Monday Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 20 minutes here on this Monday afternoon. Let's get right back to the Kia of Auburn hotline, and Matt is up next. Hey, Matt.
Hello, Matt.
Hey, guys. I was listening to the discussion about quarterbacks. I think I know the answer to this question. I asked it last year. I'll ask it again. Don't you think we could see a little more separation if we would let the quarterbacks actually play live in scrimmage and see what they can do when people are actually trying to tackle them?
I think that the wisdom in college football now is that the risk of an injury isn't worth what you get out of that. I think there's probably something to it if you're evaluating it, but the thought of losing a quarterback to an injury because you let him take hits in a scrimmage in the fall is probably a thing that scares coaching staffs out of doing that more than anything else, I would think. I mean, where are you guys on that?
No, I agree. I understand what you're saying, Matt. Now, I will say this. One of the things that the coordinators and Hugh Freeze have talked about, and one of the things – I think AL.com brought this up in a story over the weekend. Hugh talking about strain on the quarterbacks. I talked to someone who said that there were an awful lot of stunts and blitzes against Peyton Thorne on Saturday. They weren't going to tackle him to the ground, but they wanted to disrupt him and get after him and put him in uncomfortable situations. That may have led to a couple of people saying, boy, he didn't look as comfortable as Robbie. I don't think they did that as much with Robbie when he was at quarterback, but I also think that Peyton at times checked into a run and it turned into a pretty big run because they might have been blitzing or something like that. So they're trying to put them in unpredictable situations without having to go ahead and go, you know, full bore and take him to the ground.
Right. Well, I guess that makes sense. Just a little bit old school. I just think occasionally you got to see what they're going to do when they have a chance to run and see if they can get that first down or whatever. But other question I was going to ask is, do you guys think we should be happy that our offensive line may be a little better because we ran well, or maybe our defensive line is a concern?
I think you should be thrilled with the offense. I honestly think you should be absolutely thrilled with the offensive line in the running game. I mean, like, over the moon ecstatic. I'm not one to usually say things like this, right?
No, you're right. You're right. I think the defensive line's going to be okay.
I do too.
Solid. Yeah, I don't know that they'll be great, but I think the offensive line may just be better than we're used to seeing and have seen in quite a while. But Hugh Freeze talked about that too. He said he never feels good. He never feels good because if one side does well, he's worried, is the other side not any good?
Yeah.
Well, that's encouraging. Maybe we have some good running backs too. Last question I'll hang up. I mean,
Auburn does.
any injuries that happened in the – I guess you can't really
– I didn't hear of any injuries during the scrimmage. Right. Now, one thing I was glad that Coach Freeze ran down a list of players
who were banged up. Right.
And that way we're not the ones reporting on it from fall practice.
But all right, so I can run it down. I got the story here. Wesley Steiner is limited, hamstring. Coy Moore, nursing ankle injury. And Javarius Johnson's got stitches in his mouth. That was during the scrimmage.
That was before.
That's why we didn't see in the day
All of these injuries that Brian is listing were injuries going into the scrimmage. Yeah. They were not injuries that occurred at the scrimmage. Because Wesley Steiner's been in the non-contact.
Right.
Coy
Moore's been in the boot.
Yeah. So
Javarius has been invisible.
Austin Keys and Malcolm Johnson's shoulder injuries, but neither are significant.
I think Austin Keys, that may have happened during the scrimmage.
Okay. Kendon Brown, we mentioned earlier, the first half of the show. He missed a good portion of the spring. I think it's an ankle with him.
I'm not sure what it is.
Maybe there's something else there, too. I don't know. But so there is a little,
we haven't heard of anything major.
As far as I know, nobody's out with a knee or anything. That seems to happen every camp or so.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Appreciate the call, Matt. 334-321-1390. Yeah, I heard that Keys was playing and left favoring a shoulder. So that would sort of fit that. But you're right. I mean, that's the thing you always hold your breath, cross your fingers that you don't have a major injury, which can happen at any time, whether or not they're having contact.
Yeah, and when we talk about the defensive line, I do think they're going to be solid. I think Jason Jones has improved. I think Justin Rogers gives Auburn another athletic.
Marcus Harris is solid as can be.
I think Marcus Harris, I think he's actually better than solid in my opinion, but I'm pretty high on Marcus Harris compared to others. Also, he looks great. Mm-hmm. Like, he looks as good as he's looked since he's been here. He had a great offseason, in my opinion, in the weight room. I think Keldrick Falk is going to be an All-American type player, but he's just a freshman.
That's not just you saying that, by the way. Who was it? Was it Jason or McLeod? One of the two defensive players today.
A lot of people.
I think it was McLeod talking about Falk moving.
He's telling him he's going to be an All-American in the next couple of
Falk
years.
Falk moving from edge to defensive to end and saying, you've got it all.
And, it's not just Keldrick Falk's athletic ability. It's not just his length and his size and how fast he is and quick he is. He's got the other parts, too. He wants to be good. He hustles. He plays hard. He's got what you want in a football player. So
heard someone earlier today talking about somebody who seemingly had all the physical tools, and they said, his heart's not in it.
Yeah.
Keldrick Falk seems like you're not saying his heart's not in it when you talk about. And seeing the improvements he made just from spring to now, would tell you that's somebody who giving it his all.
And I think him and the silly kite will be a great 1-2 punch there at defensive end. You got the two guys at nose guard. You got Marcus Harris and who was the other defensive tackle? Lawrence Johnson or
usually Lawrence Johnson.
There's somebody else there too. Zeke is there. Somebody else is there. I'm not thinking of at the moment. And then you know I think they've got some players at Jack. And I think Jalen's going to be Auburn's best pass rusher. It sounds like Steven Sings may be better than people are expecting. But overall, I look at that group, and I think they're a solid SEC group, but I don't think they're spectacular yet.
Bobby Jamison Travis is the other
guy. Yeah. He can play nose, too.
Yeah.
And he's a guy that's going to get better as camp goes on, as the season goes on.
Sings, he's another big guy.
Yep. Sings seems like somebody who's made a bit of a move because he was not running with the first team that the first couple of days we were out there, and then later on it looks like he's – somebody they've worked in.
And then we heard good things about McAllister Saturday. Yeah, apparently, tipped a couple of passes and was in the backfield a good bit.
Yeah, yep. Aldridge got to talk to him last week, and he was really high on the group as a whole, and especially singled out Sings, who he coached and recruited at Liberty, and Jalen McLeod, who's impressed a lot of people since arriving. I believe Jason Jones also had some nice things to say about Jalen McLeod's ability when he was talking with the media earlier today.
I don't think that group has a Derek Hall necessarily at this time yet, but I think they've got some good solid players. And getting McLeod was important because Auburn didn't really have a really good edge pass rusher. And I think that's what he can do for
Auburn. Well, if they can get a push up the middle or from the strong side in as well, that helps your Jacks because then they're not going to be facing two guys.
Yep.
Asked McLeod if the situation is either McLeod or Sings on the field, or if there could be instances where Auburn goes with both of them. McLeod was saying they got a couple packages where you could see McLeod on one side, Sings on the other, coming after the quarterback, which I suppose would be passing downs and places where Auburn wants. And you wonder what defensive lineman would be out there if Auburn was on a pure passing down. You know, if Auburn needed to go get the quarterback,
like Marcus Harris at nose, maybe.
Yeah, who makes the cut and who doesn't? Yep. You know, seems like Keldrick Faulks out there in every situation.
Absolutely,
it's like he's out there in every situation you want. But then,
you want to play him as much as you can without wearing him out.
Yeah, he makes the cut, and then maybe Steven Sings and Jalen McLeod are out there helping out, trying to get the quarterback.
But they keep recruiting the defensive line like they are now, and look out. I mean, just look out. They're going to be stacked. They're going to be stacked to that position in the future. It's going to take some of these
defensively
guys.
Overall, I mean, look at the secondary already.
And
the
linebacker,
for next year.
Too. Yeah, yeah. The linebacker
position. Yeah.
They've recruited really well in this 24 class. So,
I mean, that's funny because, I mean, you think of Hugh Freeze and you think offense. And look at the defensive guys they're bringing in already.
This whole
next
staff
year.
Is really just working their tail off, and it's so refreshing to see that. Not saying the previous staff didn't. Some of them did, but not all of them.
Some of them weren't allowed to.
And certainly the head coach now is just working his tail off and recruiting for Auburn. And you see the results right away, even faster than I thought we would see them.
334-321-1390. We've got time for a few more calls. We'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Monday Drive.
Kia of Auburn.
Part of the drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Final segment of the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Brian Matthews. All right, so we've talked a little bit about what's coming up here. I mean, we've got this week. This week is another big week. I mean, because the final full scrimmage is this Saturday.
Yes, it is. And we'll be over there at Jordan-Hare Stadium to get the latest from that, afterwards and during. And certainly tomorrow we get to talk to the offensive assistants, which I think will be terrific, getting some insight from the actual position coaches for some of these young men competing out there. And we'll also do our podcast tomorrow. We'll have plenty of recruiting updates. Kamarian Franklin, the big defensive lineman out of Mississippi. I think he's number one overall player in Mississippi.
Yes, he is.
Number two or three. What did I say? Two or three defensive in strong side defensive in the country.
I think he said number two.
Yeah, number two overall. He is announcing Saturday. He's a five-star on Rivals, and I like Auburn's chances at this time. So, I mean, here we go again with Auburn recruiting.
What is the – all right, what's the largest – number of five stars that, that Auburn's ever brought in?
I'd have to look.
Because that's only been going on since like 90, late 99 or 2000. Somewhere around in there.
I don't remember
when
a whole
the five-star system came in.
A whole lot of multiple five stars.
It seems like a couple is all I can remember.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got a chance to top that pretty
That's
solidly.
They're tearing it up right now. And this is what Auburn had to have. I mean, I've said it over and over. They had to go out there and start competing for these kids, these top high school kids, with the Alabamas and the LSUs and the Georgias and the Clemsons. And they're doing it, and they're winning some of these battles. And you're going to see this really pay off for Auburn in the future.
I mean, I'm looking back on some of the, you know, trying to find who was a five-star and stuff, especially when you get to the early 2000s, mm-hmm. right? Because I would think maybe maybe like an 01 class or an 02. I mean, Cadillac.
04 class. I mean, 2010 class is number four in the country. 2011 was number seven in the country. 2007, seventh in the country. 2002, sixth in the country. So some of those classes might have multiple five stars in them.
Yeah, but not lately. Not a lot lately.
No.
Stealing some work for some other people here. What, 93, you would have had Damian Craig and Steven Davis in the same recruiting class. 01, Cadillac, Anthony Mix, Brandon Jacobs.
I didn't even know in 93 they were doing five stars.
Yeah, I don't think so
back
either.
Then it was mostly four. It was usually, and they would only go to four stars. Yes.
Obamanu, Aroma Shadu, Courtney Taylor,
one of the first guys I
Marcus
covered
McNeil.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
That was that's 02
that's
class.
That's 02,
Courtney
yeah.
Taylor
yeah.
was not, though. I mean, Courtney,
I think
was
the only
of, he was a sleeper.
I think your only five star in 02 would have been Obamanu.
Ben Obamanu was a five star back then, I believe. Yeah.
Anyways, don't know like where this class compares all time. Maybe you got to go to one of those classes from early Chiswick.
I mean, you go back and guys that would be five stars now. I mean, would have been if they'd had a five star system. You know, Coach Dye had some great classes, but back then there was just it was the recruiting services were ranking them differently and things like that. Because I mean, but really since then I can't recall anything that looks like what it could be with the staff that Auburn has.
I agree. It's amazing, and Auburn has not had a top five class since 2010. That's the only one in the Rivals era. They've only had one top 10 class in the last 8-9 years. That was number 10 in 2020.
Auburn should be a top. They should be there a top 10 class because when you're a top 12 to 15 program, you know, over of all time, you're just in a better recruiting area than some of those other schools are.
Right.
It's more difficult for schools outside of the Southeast to be able to have access to that kind of talent on a yearly basis.
2006, Auburn signed a five-star defensive tackle named Greg Smith.
No,
they signed.
Oh yeah, he signed. He signed
Tim Hawthorne.
He counted on two or three classes.
Tim Hawthorne
was
part of that class.
Yeah,
Hawthorne was a four and a top 100 player.
Right, top 100.
And I believe is the most. He's the highest rated receiver. Like Auburn has not signed a higher rated receiver than Tim Hawthorne since.
Yeah, that's
Tim
that's,
Hawthorne.
That's going to change. Under
unfortunately,
your phrase.
Tim Hawthorne was more the next Willie Northern than he was the next Terry Beasley.
Also in 2006, a defensive back from Troy named Zach Etheridge.
Pretty
part
good.
Of that part of that class as well.
That was a Philip Lally recruit right there.
Yep. Brian, great stuff as always. Looking forward to everything that you guys do.
Appreciate it. Looking forward to it too. Tomorrow, plenty of coverage of practice. We'll have a rundown podcast and much more as the week goes on.
All right, we are out of time here on the Monday Drive. All right, so tomorrow, Dan, you're gonna check the first part of practice and check in.
Yeah, I'll go to the I'll do some. We could do a little assistant coach interviews. Might have some of to run early in the show.
Yeah, I should be there for that.
Andy Burcham?
That's right.
Is that a Tuesday thing now?
That is a Tuesday thing.
You
want
to check
now.
To see if he might be at the viewing window? I don't know, but see.
Yeah, that's true.
Check to see what Andy Burcham's doing. He'll take your call.
Yeah, we will check on that as well. So, yeah, join us tomorrow. We're out of time here on the Monday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.